And good afternoon. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And, I tell you always at the top, you can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM, and you can check us on the web, Taylor-Report.com, for previous programs. And today we're going to talk to Chris Black, a Toronto lawyer who has practiced law at the various international tribunals and has come away a little bit sobered and unhappy with the way things work. And he's got we're talking about an important one today. The International Criminal Court has arrested a couple of lawyers representing Mr. Bemba of the Congo, and it's a rather shocking story, and I don't see a lot of press for it. And Chris Black will be telling us about that. And at about the halfway point, we are fortunate to have Larry Krotz. I'm going to call him LarryKrotz.ca. He's a writer and documentary filmmaker, and he has written a book, A Child's Country Christmas, Rural Canada in the 1950s. And Larry, of course, has written a lot of important articles and books, but particularly one I was always struck with, The Uncertain Business of Doing Good, Outsiders in Africa. Great, great book. And today he's going to be here and read from his A Child's Country Christmas. I want to mark the we're going to be speaking to Chris Black in just one moment, but I'll just remind you that December 14 kind of went by again without a lot of people paying attention. It is the anniversary of the Battle of San Eustache outside Montreal, Lower Canada, and where John Colborn and the British Army killed 100 Canadians. In the 1837, December 14, 1837, the Canadians were led in that battle by Jean-Olivier Chenier, and he was taken into a local public house and quartered so that everybody could see his remains, and they left them lying there, and they left the bodies lying there because they were busy going around burning every village they could find. That's John Colborn, you know, Colborn Lodge, and Port Colborn, old name for him. He went on to become the governor of Ireland. I bet they loved him there. And he was also a commander in the Ionian Islands, which the British lost, sadly, for Prince Philip. But anyhow, it's not something we should forget. That was a struggle for self-determination, as we would call it now. They called it responsible government then. And that was, of course, the year of the rebellions. And in Ontario, Upper Canada, it was William Lyon Mackenzie who came in for a beating. But that said, I think we're joined by Chris Black. Are you there, Chris? Hello? My golly, he's not there. Just through the miracle of radio, which permits me to say further. There he is. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Oh, you were hearing?
Yes, I am here.
You probably tried to answer, and we couldn't hear.
Yes.
So, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You are certainly the most qualified person I know. You have represented clients at The Hague,
right,
at the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia, and you've also been at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda.
Correct.
And you, of course, watched this mushrooming of the other little tribunals, but then the big one, the International Criminal Court, which was a kind of, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the result, you might say, of the ad hoc courts. They said, "Well, now we've proven it can be done. Let's have a permanent one."
Right.
And we've been reporting at the Taylor Report, and others have been talking about it. The African countries are beginning to really become unhappy with this court because the only people charged are Africans, and the most celebrated, I suppose, accused is a man named Bemba, and now, in the midst of all this discussion of whether or not racism is operating here and colonialism, his lawyers have been charged. Can you tell us the story of this and what's going on with this court?
Well, it's not entirely clear, but there seems to be allegations by the prosecution that somehow they managed to wiretap some of these alleged lawyers and part of the legal team and Bemba himself, and say they've got evidence that they were trying to bribe a witness or present forged evidence, but how they actually did that, under what authority they could do that, and why the prosecution would do that to the defense, but the defense can't do it to the prosecution. It's very bizarre, because here the prosecution is acting like a police force. Mm-hmm. Instead of just another party in the case, so it's very strange. Well, and it rings bells of what happened at the ICTR in many cases.
I was going to say I know from work I did at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, there was a number of lawyers were accused of tampering with witnesses, and there were investigators who were arrested.
Right.
All this initiative coming from the prosecution side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you raised the point I wanted to ask about. You'd think a third party would have to look at this, right? I mean,
yes.
If you're an interested party, you're the prosecutor, and your case isn't going well, whether you're liable to want to accuse your opposite counsel of doing something improper.
Right. You would expect that they...
So third party should do something.
Exactly. So you'd think that they would instruct, say, the French or Belgians and the Dutch, where these people are, or in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where these people reside, to investigate these allegations and charge them there. And they could also charge them with contempt of court, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
and have a contempt hearing before the actual ICC. But the prosecution itself shouldn't be really prosecuting an opposite party, opposed an interest, and also, of course, helping to destroy the defense, because mm-hmm. it makes Bemba look like he's guilty, he's got something to hide.
Yes. Well, when you see the parties involved, Belgium, Holland, and is it France?
France is holding one suspect still.
Yeah.
The witness, the alleged witness.
Well, now, again, these are the parties which people who have had accused before these tribunals have noticed. These are states that are themselves highly partisan.
Right.
And have played a rather heavy hand in the parts of Africa where the substance of the matter is being fought out.
Mm-hmm.
You would think, wouldn't you, that maybe someone in, say, Belgium would say to the ICC, I can't investigate that on your say-so. I'd have to have somebody else.
Yeah, it'd have to be in a separate investigation, because how would you know that the opposite party is not just making these things up to destroy the defense or make them look bad? I mean,
well, the defense is part of the bar. I mean,
exactly.
Part of the court.
Yeah, and... they did this time and again at the IC, the Rwanda Tribunal. Yeah, right. They accused many lawyers and investigators. I was accused many times. David Jacobs was accused. Alison Turner faced serious problems. And a number of others were accused falsely of either attempting to bribe witnesses or forging documents. Every time something embarrassing happened to them, they accused us of doing something
and
illegal.
By the way, yes, and when you read about it in the papers, you say to yourself, well, my case is compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are hearing that, oh, I might be doing something improper.
Right. Right, and it also disarms the defense in a way, because witnesses who were going to cooperate with you then fear that they're going to get charged themselves, so they stop cooperating with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all know now, of course, throughout these trials, that it was the prosecution who was actually forging documents and fabricating witnesses all through mm-hmm. those trials, but no, we can't touch them.
Yes, there certainly were cases where people came forward and told how they had been threatened.
Yes.
You know, it's a very turbulent matter, and it's not being treated that way. You can see why, or one can see maybe there's some hope in the fact that these African countries, Kenya now leading the way, are saying, you know, you don't run a proper court.
Right.
There's something. There seems to be a devil inside the machine.
Yes, exactly. And I don't quite get buy into this racist necessarily, because it is colonialist, though. It's quite clear that they're only charging Africans, but they're not charging all Africans. They're only charging certain Africans, which, in my view, are the ones who stand in the way of Western interests,
mm-hmm.
such as Gbagbo and Bembo and so on and so on.
Yes.
But
people who lost narrow elections are
right.
taken off the scene, or maybe won them. In the case of Gbagbo,
we
don't – actually, I don't think anybody could say they know sitting here who won the election.
No.
There's no question demographically that Mr. Gbagbo was a powerful man.
Correct. And Gaddafi was charged with he ended up murdered,
mm-hmm.
shot down in the street like a dog. I mean – but Kagame and Museveni, who are Western allies and who've committed mass atrocities for the last 20 years, are not charged at all. So it's the Africans who stand in their way who are charged, but those who are allied with them are not are left alone.
Yeah. Well, this is, we're speaking to Chris Black, a Toronto lawyer, and he has practiced at the Hague. And tell it, what is the situation with these lawyers are being held? I heard there's some dispute of whether or not they've even had opportunity for bail. I mean,
there's a no. There was they're all held. The lead counsel and co-counsel manager are held at Scheveningen. Bember, of course, is also charged. The witnesses. One man is held in the Dutch by the Dutch authorities. One by the French.
Well, who's holding on to this evidence? You would, you know, that, would, that they could dangle in front of us and say, "Oh, you did the right thing."
You can't find it on the website. You don't know what it is. It's just there was an initial appearance. I'm not sure if you had a chance to see the video of it. It was only an hour long. It didn't really reveal too much, except that the defendant, one defendant, did say that this is an attempt to destroy the defense. It's false allegations, but.
And
but there wasn't much.
Those of us with experience with these tribunals would that would be the first thought to go through our mind,
right? Because Madame Bensouda, and I don't know what this particular case, of course, what the facts really are. But you know, we have to remember that Madame Bensouda, who is the prosecutor, was part of the ICTR prosecution teams, which were heavily engaged in this sort of conduct at the Rwanda Tribunal.
You know, I focused also on Mr. Bemba. He's an interesting figure. He's always now, they now describe him as a rebel leader. Actually, they leave out that he was a candidate for president and almost won the election. As a matter of fact, his partisans say he did win the election in Congo.
That's right. Yeah, so, he is one of the most popular candidates. Yeah, I've heard from Congolese that he was the most popular person there. And actually did win. That's what their opinion. But
and he gets picked up because he feels he's in danger. Actually, the Bemba story is quite fascinating. He said his compound was surrounded by the army tanks because they wanted him to go somewhere he didn't feel like going. He's a citizen, and he didn't want to go where they wanted him to go.
Right.
And it led to a kerfuffle. His answer, his solution was to travel to Europe until things calmed down. He said. Is an elected senator in the Congo, and so he's sitting in Belgium minding his own business, and they pick him up on the ICC charge.
Yes,
and take him away. And the ICC, by the way, the charge against him has to do with the Central African Republic, where he has never been.
Right.
That people who had served with him had been there.
Yeah.
I assume. I don't know. But but this isn't even in the Congo.
No, it's a bit like Charles Taylor's situation.
And it is a political removal. Here's the second most powerful man in the Congo, according to the election.
Mm-hmm.
And calling him a rebel leader is a highly misleading name.
And same with Laurent Gbagbo. He's being taken out. He probably, I mean, I view, from what I've read, he surely had a good claim to say he won the election.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's taken out of the circulation by the French. He's arrested. Thousands of people are killed.
Yes.
Probably by the French authorities and their allies in Cote d'Ivoire, and he's taken out and sent to prison now for a year, and as far as I'm aware, there's still no confirmation of the charges in that case.
Yeah.
So he's in prison for a year with no actual charges.
Yeah, I think the charge is he was serving as president of Ivory Coast when he was asked not to.
Yes, that's correct.
It is, he was defeated, the man with power now is Mr.
Ouattara,
who is a last important job was at the World Bank.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So he's qualified to run
Ivory
Coast.
Exactly. And so.
And by the way, now the French, Central African Republic, allegedly where the crimes took place in 2002, by the way, the French are there now.
Right.
And they promised to stay.
And it's also odd because the writ of the International Criminal Court begins in 2003. So I don't know how they extend their jurisdiction back to 2002.
That's you know, I'm really glad. When I saw that, I thought, well, I'm going to look like a dumbbell if I say this. But I know you're not a dumbbell. You're quite highly qualified. Yes, 2002, there wasn't an ICC, right?
No, and the jurisdiction is not retroactive. So I don't understand what the case is. But now, it may be that, in fact, one has to wonder, did the case for the prosecution was didn't exist. Now they've arranged for some other charge to keep him in prison. This charge of bribing a witness, they can put him in prison for a couple of years just simply for that, and then the other case falls by the wayside.
Well, I would be...
I think you're telling us that you cannot find any evidence, right? They're not telling us what they have.
No, there's no documents. The prosecution documents are on check today again. They're not on the ICC website. You can't see any documents. Probably the lawyers involved may have them, but they're not public at any rate.
And they had wiretaps.
Yes.
On whose authority can you get a wiretap of a defense counsel?
That's also not known.
And a prisoner, by the way.
Right. That's also not known. How did they get the wiretap authorization? From whom? And without even a preliminary hearing, which the defense is entitled to.
ICC is not a sovereign state. Who has the power over the electronic systems?
Exactly. That's very worrying.
To
because,
do that.
Yes, very worrying, because how do they do that?
I suppose we have to ask that fellow living in Moscow now.
Yeah.
Mr. Snow might know how this is done.
Right.
Everybody would like to hire him briefly to explain this.
And the accused in their initial hearing last week made the quite correct request or demand to the judge, why were they not just ordered to appear by an ordinary summons?
Yes.
And then appear and then stand down and they can carry on their work and prepare the defense of this case. But they were arrested.
They were treated really like serious criminals.
Yes, and the defense
counsel came in the middle of the night. One of them said something like 20 or 30 police officers came into his home.
That was the Congolese a member of parliament who was arrested. 2 a.m. in the morning, he said, with 30 men appeared in the middle of the night, which is, you know, they did that deliberately to terrorize the family.
Well, and also it makes a huge political splash, right?
Right, and the ICC judge washed his hands of that. He said, well, that's not up to me, it's the local authorities.
Could he reprimand, say, I didn't really intend for you to kick the guy? If he says, I wash my hands, I mean, that really not the most persuasive expression.
No, because any proper judge would have said, well, I'll look into it and I'll send out an order, send out a statement condemning that type of arrest. That shouldn't happen, and we can do something about it.
But, you know, they came before the court. These are lawyers in good standing with long professional records.
Right.
You don't treat them.
No,
they're some sort of criminals.
No, it's shocking for counsel before any court to be treated like that. You don't treat counsel like that, no matter what the allegation is. You have to have some respect for who they are, and the presumption is that they wouldn't do such a thing.
Yeah,
because they can be disbarred. I mean, it's very serious.
Presumption of innocence applies also to lawyers, right?
Of course, right. And because they're offices of the court and their own jurisdictions, like here in Ontario, we're offices of the court here, not just...
Incidentally, those are, my understanding is those lawyers practice in Europe.
Yes, they're members of the Paris Bar and the Belgian Bar.
Well, now what is happening, this is where I always think solutions might come from. The various bars around the world, is anybody saying, complaining? I understand there's been some complaint.
Yeah, there was a discussion on the net among some ICC counsel and former ICTR counsel here, like David Jacobs, some others, myself, they were circulating ideas about what to do, and there's been suggestions of asking the Law Society here to make a request. That was David Jacobs' suggestion, or we could get the bar associations and so on. We didn't know they had lawyers, but I see Mr. Kaufman, Nicholas Kaufman, has shown up on Bemba's case, which is a bit odd.
Well, in what capacity?
He's listed on the latest. There was an appeal filed 3 days ago to...
Do the lawyers have lawyers? I guess is my next question.
Well, the lawyers seem to have... Jean Flam is the lawyer for one, and he filed... And he's very good. He's a very good guy. He's a Belgian counsel. And he filed a motion 3 days ago. In the initial hearing, the judge ordered that the confirmation hearing should be only done by paper, no oral hearings. Mm-hmm. So he's filed an appeal against that, saying that's not fair. So he's working for Ghanim Mukinda.
Well, I saw some notes of yours, Chris. This is Chris Black, Toronto lawyer, and who has represented some very prominent accused at The Hague and in Arusha. You made some observations that I find matters that I used to notice, and I'm always glad when to call attention to. The kind of the theater of the court, that when these lawyers or Mr. Bemba stood up, all the security guys also stood up.
Yes.
There's a kind of thing going on there, which, you know, a casual observer would say, this guy must really be, you know, a mass murderer or something.
Right, right.
Bulletproof glass and, you know, yeah, big heavy guys getting up behind him. And he's just a little guy who's trying to have a trial.
Right. And then, and these are lawyers. To see the security guards stand up with them as if they're in some sort of church, it was odd to me to see it, because it's not done in the other courts or the tribunals.
And I think you observed that the presiding judge seemed to be at sea.
He quite clearly was totally unsure of his role there. He didn't know what to say. he was very hesitant, and he didn't seem to know what he should be doing.
He kept saying, well, thank you very much. And
yes,
you, counsel? And the guy said, I'm here too, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
And he kept insisting. He protested too much that, of course, we're here all to ensure a very fair hearing. He kept repeating that over and over again. And yet these people are still resting in Scheveningen prison, which is a, you know, concrete, steel, and glass prison.
Those are the lawyers who are still in
prison. These are the lawyers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's outrageous. Mm-hmm. Perhaps other law groups around the world will get involved, the IADL or some other groups trying to help them.
There is one international organization. Is it Lawyers Without Frontiers or something? Somebody did complain.
I'm not aware of that yet, but they may have, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, they're way behind time, but I this really underlines, does it not, that we have to listen to the African Union, and everybody should read the speech of Uhuru Kenyatta about what's wrong with this court.
Yes, it's a court which is clearly used to target right now certain Africans who, like I say, stand in the way of Western interests. That's obvious. And how is that done? Clearly through the control by the West through the prosecution office.
Mm-hmm.
And how that control works, well, I could give you some ideas on that, but it would take a while. But clearly the countries like the United States don't want to be part of the ICC or under jurisdiction control it. That's clear.
Mm-hmm. The SCUS is, of course, not a part of the court. It just runs it.
Right.
That's very impressive. Read them and weep, as they say in sports. This is Christopher Black, outstanding criminal lawyer in Canada, but also has represented accused. And I want to ask lastly, Chris, you have represented General Dendile Mana, one of the central figures of the disaster of 1994 in Rwanda, major figure. And you've been through much of the process, and you are awaiting the results of what? Where are you in that case?
The appeal judgment. The judgment for the appeal is going to be heard February the 11th. So that'll be the end of the case. I'm hoping that he'll be fully acquitted. He's been acquitted of most of the charges. I'm hoping that good things will happen on the 11th, because, as you may know, I think our case is unique in the sense that, well, many senses, but in one important one, is that the judges in our case made a finding in their judgment at the end of the trial that the case against him was the charges against him were politically motivated. And I think that's an astounding finding.
It's
unique in any of these tribunals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping for the best for him.
Yes. And really, haven't they just reduced it to failure of duty and oversight of people? Isn't that where it's hanging at the moment?
Yes, he was charged with many massacres, with his men, gendarmerie, and himself personally with many murders. They were all knocked down, but he was stuck with
responsibility.
Failing to punish his men in two incidents, which we think one never existed and one they weren't involved at all.
Yeah. So. And one of the people working for the prosecution as an important investigator was an officer who served under him.
That's correct.
Not charged.
No, not charged. Yeah. Well, none of his men, all the gendarmes under his command, moved up and became generals and brigadier generals under the Kagame regime. Not one of them was charged.
Yeah.
And if they had been, if he's guilty, they'd all be guilty below him. But no, they're all promoted up. Yeah. He wasn't promoted. He was charged because he refused to cooperate.
And he's presently in custody in Arusha.
Yes, and our theory was that he was arrested and charged to force him to testify falsely against Mr. Bagasora, and that's what the judges, I think, believed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest of the charges were just fabricated after he was arrested. That's clear.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very important case. We're really watching that closely. Did you say in the new year, early in the new year?
February the 11th is the date set for that judgment. I'm hoping for the best.
Well, we look forward to talking to you at that time, Chris. And thank you very much for the help on the ICC.
You're welcome.
It's a very important case. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Christopher Black. And you're listening to The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And let me see. One thing I want to make sure I mention that I noticed, I want to help you with, read the Toronto Star. They had a headline yesterday, day before, that John McCain is in the Ukraine, and they said to mediate. So if you've been following the Internet and following Mr. McCain, you'll remember that he showed up in Libya to mediate, I guess, and then he showed up across the Syrian border illegally, I guess, to mediate. Now he's in the Ukraine. But why the Star would say he's there? That's on the face of it. I think an ordinary guy not paying very much attention would say that seems highly unlikely. McCain is more known for bringing headaches to people than he is to solving any problems. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a brief break. We're going to be back, and we're going to talk to Larry Krotz, larrykrotz.ca. And we're going to talk about his book, A Child's Country Christmas.